Israel and Hamas have agreed to pause fighting in Gaza to allow hundreds of thousands of children to receive polio vaccinations. Those pauses will occur in specific locations for 8 to 9 hours a day over 3 days beginning on Sunday. The World Health Organization aims to vaccinate 640,000 children under the age of 10. Meanwhile, in the West Bank, at least 16 people have been killed in what the Israeli military calls counterterrorism raids that began Wednesday in the cities of Jenin, Tul Karm, and the Al-Fara refugee camp. Among five militants, Israeli forces say they killed today in the city of Tul Karm, Mohammed Jaber, a local commander they'd long pursued. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad, a militant force backed by Iran, confirmed Jaber's death. Israeli officials say Jaber was linked to, quote, numerous terror attacks, including the June death of an Israeli man, Amnon Mukhtar. Jaber was killed in an overnight gun battle near a mosque, which left residents caught in the crossfire. Khalid Abu Al-Kiab says he and his wife barely escaped their home alive.
The house went up in flames as they shot 3-4 rockets. We broke down the bathroom window and got out. My wife's shoulder and arm were burned. Thank God it only came to that.
Meanwhile, families at the Al-Fara refugee camp buried their dead. Four killed in an Israeli raid yesterday. Masood Naja survived that raid. Today, he buried his two children who did not. The IDF released this drone footage today, they say showing a militant base inside a mosque in the camp. Their forces have now withdrawn from Al-Fara. Also today, Defense Minister Yoav Gallant said returning Israeli citizens to their homes along the Lebanese border, where fighting with Hezbollah continues, must be a goal of the war. Just yesterday, rescued hostage Qaid Farhan al-Qadi returned to his village home near Rahat.
I feel 100%. And next to you, another 200%. Do everything you can, if it's demonstrations. Everything to bring the people home from this side to the other, and from the other side to bring them back as well. For me, they are all human beings, no matter what.
His return is bittersweet. Israel has said that his Bedouin Arab village was built without permits and has plans to demolish 70% of homes there. Al-Qadi's home has not received a demolition notice. For perspective on Israel's operation in the West Bank, we turn to Stephen Erlanger, chief diplomatic correspondent for the New York Times. He previously met with the Islamic Jihad leader who Israeli forces killed today. Stephen, welcome, and thanks for joining us. So these Israeli forces had been trying to kill Mohammed Jaber for a very long time. They actually thought that they'd done so back in April, and then he emerged alive 3 days later to kind of cult status among people there for surviving. But tell us, who was Mohammed Jaber, and why was he one of Israel's most wanted men?
Well, he was the leader of a group of militants in the Tul Karm refugee camp, and he'd organized them very well. So there was a collective of militants from Fatah, from all the other factions. And after the October 7th invasion by Hamas, they started to recruit more people, and spirited by that, encouraged by that invasion, many of them, like this kid, Abu Shuja, turned to Islamic Jihad or to Hamas away from Fatah because they felt that Hamas had actually broken through a complete stagnation in the prospect of Palestinian nationhood. And so for a lot of people, he was a hero because he kept surviving Israeli efforts to kill him, but he represented a new generation of young Palestinian militants willing to fight and die for their dream of a free and independent Palestine and to drive Israeli occupiers, as they see them, out of the West Bank.
And Stephen, just to clarify, Abu Shuja, who you referenced there, that's the nom de guerre of Mohammed Jaber. It translates to Father of the Brave. But when you met with him in person on a reporting trip to Tul Karm in the West Bank earlier this year, and he told you he'd switched allegiances from the more moderate Fatah to the more extremist Islamic Jihad, what was the reason for that? Was that just because of October 7th, or had that been building for a while?
He switched to Islamic Jihad partly because everyone among his peers have lost faith in the Palestinian Authority. They regard them as collaborating with Israel, and they've been very offended that the Palestinian Security Forces, whenever Israel would come to attack people like Abu Shuja, did not fight the Israelis, but either collaborated with them or actually stayed at home. So there's also been a growing dissatisfaction with the leader of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, and also the feeling that the Palestinian state was really going nowhere, that there was a stagnation, that life looked hopeless. And as ugly as the Hamas invasion was, for many young Palestinians, it expressed a degree of hope that their own situation was not hopeless forever.
And we just saw today the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres say that these Israeli raids are fueling what he called an already explosive situation in the West Bank. But he also said they could further undermine the Palestinian Authority. What do you make of that?
Well, I think the Palestinian Authority is pretty well undermined in many ways, partly through its own faults, but also through the Israeli government's decision to withhold taxes from them. And also after October 7th, they've closed the West Bank. So Palestinians who had legal permits to work in Israel could no longer go to Israel to work. And Palestinians living in Israel could no longer go to places like Jenin and Tulkarm to eat and shop. So the economy crashed, and the Palestinian Authority was already weakened. Now you have these far-right ministers inside the Israeli government who talk about annexing the West Bank, who are encouraging settlers to take more ground. So all of this does fuel more militancy and creates anxiety among the Israeli military that there will be a new wave of suicide bombings and explosives used against Israelis in Israel proper, let alone among the settlers.
Well, Stephen, as you know, Israel says the goal of this operation in the West Bank is to root out this militancy that, as you've reported on, has taken hold in many of the refugee camps there in the West Bank. Knowing what you know about that force, is that goal attainable?
Well, it's impossible to defeat an idea. This we understand, whether it's expressed by Hamas or by Fatah or by these kids. They have a dream of an independent Palestine. They have a dream of their land taken back, of Israeli settlers and occupiers gone. And there's going to be very little that Israel can do to destroy that. The idea of a two-state solution, I have to say, seems farther away than ever. And it would require giving Palestinians authority and sovereignty and control over their own lives that Israel, for its stated security reasons, is not prepared to give. So I see this third front war going on indefinitely.
That is Stephen Erlanger, chief diplomatic correspondent for the New York Times. Stephen, thank you so much. Good to speak with you.
Thank you.